This is the Own It Show, where we tell stories of how everyday people made ownership theirs to create extraordinary success.
Welcome back to another week of the Own It Show, Coach Conversations. I'm Justin.
And I'm Elise. Welcome to the show.
And guys, I know that we've all been up against hard times. We've all tried to navigate our life in a certain way, but it's something to be able to hear a story of people who have been there, people who have actually been in hard times, been in situations that that are not favorable, that people look at and go, how are you able to overcome this? How are you able to move forward? And it's not what they've done or how they've done it, but the systems and strategies in which they used to get to where they are today. And it's no better than learning from somebody who's actually done it, who's lived in both sides of the shoes of being in a life where you want it to be somewhere and ultimately now living that life. And we are so fortunate today to have a guest that has done that and ultimately now launched multi-million dollar businesses and has been a top level author and is influencing people from stages all around the world. And we're actually currently talking to him from Nashville in a hotel room. And it's just so great to have him on. So Stephen, it's a pleasure to have you here and to spend some time with you.
Guys, I'm stoked to be here. Man, your show's amazing. I can't wait to hang out with you guys. I apologize again that I'm not in my studio. I know it's bugging me more than anything else. But the reality was, you guys said, here's what we can do. And I said, well, we're going to do it. Also, we're going to make sure it happens. So yes, I'm in a hotel room. Hopefully the audience will listen to more of what I have to say rather than the backdrop behind me, but we'll see.
No, I love it. It's so important to understand the person behind it, because you look at what you've done and what you've accomplished and people are like, well, I can never get there. There's no way I can influence that way. There's no way I can have that level of impact, but it hasn't always been like that for you. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to kind of go back and kind of tell a little bit of your story. What drove you to ultimately create that switch and that catalyst moment that was the aha that drove you to where you are today?
Yeah. So first of all, I think that we're all capable of having that switch or that aha moment. In fact, I would dare say that we'll probably have 5 to 10 of them in our given lifetime. You know, my team and I like to call them the cornerstone moments. Now, I think the first thing that I came as part of my process and my system back in the day and kind of getting to where I'm at was ironically having someone believe in me when I didn't believe in myself. Because when you grow up in a toxic environment or difficult environment like I did, and unfortunately, like 67% of the American population would actually fall in this category, according to a Time Magazine Rasmussen poll that was done, or actually Harris poll that was done about 2 years ago before COVID. They would all say that they're, in many cases, frustrated, isolated, alone, somehow missing a part of life, somehow missing a part of business. Somehow, you know, maybe they're a great entrepreneur, but then they go home and they're not super connected to their spouse. Or maybe they're super connected to their spouse, but they're living paycheck to paycheck. And I've learned a long time ago that the greatest thing that comes with that is getting to the place where you're surrounded by people that actually believe in you. And I was very fortunate growing up in a broken home and then later fighting homelessness and some other things, to find someone who refused to give up on me. His name was Steve Myrick, and he was my first mentor. I grew up knowing him as a child a little bit when I was about the age of 11. After my grandmother had passed away, I moved in with my father, who unfortunately at the time was still struggling with alcoholism. And for some reason, Steve Myrick took a liking to me. I'm not entirely sure to this day why, but I am grateful that he did, because he was the first person to tell me that I could be more. And he actually did it with a random question on a hot summer afternoon. He pulled me down off a framing crew, put me in his Jeep Grand Cherokee like he did every so often, and started talking to me. And I think he could start to see that I was starting to exhibit the signs of the limiting beliefs that comes with coming from a background kind of more attracted to poverty or lack. And I think he was starting to see me make those things. Like, he saw me starting to ask people for money and starting to get into that borrowing mentality, right? And unfortunately for me, I was watching people borrow money with no intent to repay it. So there was no integrity or character there. And I think he witnessed that. And so as a result, he pulls me down one afternoon. I'm not even thinking anything about it. All I know is the air condition's amazing and it's hot outside. That's what I knew. And as a result, he asked me one question. He said, Stephen, what's the difference between a rich man and a poor man? And I was like, well, shoot, I'm a, you know, I'm a know nothing teenager at this stage in the game. I'm like, well, that's easy money. Of course, duh, money. He said, absolutely not. It's the way they think. Now, that on the surface is profound enough for most people, because most people don't really understand they're actually operating on some kind of operating system. Their beliefs, their actions, the results, the outcomes, the things that kind of come along with that. But he took it a step further that really hit me home. He asked me very plainly, he said, Stephen, I'm curious to know, do you want to think like me or do you want to think like your father? Now, he loved my dad. Like, my dad saw him as a father figure. But my dad was continually making poor choices as related to money, to business, to alcohol, all of that kind of stuff. Meanwhile, Steve was in an environment where he was, well, very generous, but he was also a very frugal businessman. So I've watched him literally kick police officers off a street that he owned because he was just being stubborn, strange as that sounds. I've also watched him put a $1,000 tip under a basket of hush puppies at a barbecue restaurant to wreck a single waitress that comes out and, like, you know, I can pay my bill. Like, it's just, I just wanted to be like my hero. And my hero was Steve at the time. And that was the catalyst of getting started. So I think step number one in the system is you're going to have to identify someone who's willing to believe in you until you're ready to believe in yourself. Now, the next question I get is, well, if I do that, then what if I don't have access to that person? And so I've had that question before, and I've thought about it so much so that I would say this. I had to physically, for any given time, stare at myself in a mirror and actually talk to myself and tell myself, remind myself that I was worth the effort. Because what we don't fully understand is, no matter what your sticking point is, you know, you hear a lot of people say, I'm stuck. Well, stuck is nothing more than not making progress, right? And I'm all about becoming unstoppable, right? So consistently making progress. Well, the way you do that, I think more than anything else, is you have to get in the game. You got to get in the game. You're going to have to let your expectations be far more important than your fears of where you're at. It's kind of that, I think, was it an old thing they used to talk about with, if the dog gets a nail in his hiney, right? He finally gets uncomfortable enough where he'll finally move. The reality is that your pain and your adversity get strong enough, they will push you off the porch. And I was very fortunate to have both of those things, right? I had a moment of adversity. I had a mentor that was willing to believe in me when I didn't believe in myself. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so thankful to be on your show, is because I know that's what you guys believe. I know that you guys believe inspiring and encouraging and teaching and educating people on a regular basis. And to that end, in many cases, you are already someone else's Steve Meyer.
Well, thank you for saying that. And thank you for sharing your story. It's an extremely powerful story. And I'm sure one that a lot of our listeners can really relate to, because at the end of the day, like you said, oftentimes we need somebody outside of ourselves to see what we may not be able to see mm-hmm. clearly. And when we look back at that mirror that person is reflecting back to us, it's over time and over reinforcement and a set of validation where we can start to see ourselves the way that we actually are in the world. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I know you talk a lot about is helping people with transformation. Mm-hmm. So you have the Transform You class, and you really help people through this process. Can you tell us, clearly, you know, there's, you said step one is starting with finding that person. But mm-hmm. then how do people dig inside themselves, or how do you help support them through that essential transformation process?
Yeah, so I discovered that there's really four main phases to transformation. And it doesn't matter if you're an aspiring athlete, aspiring entrepreneur, hardworking soccer mom and dad, it doesn't matter. If you want more of life, or you want more of business, or you want more of relationship, or whatever that thing is, ultimately transformation comes in four phases. And the first phase we call gaining perspective. So G, if you will. G is like the foundation of everything. Most people are getting lost in that, as I mentioned before, that operational system on a daily basis. They're not thinking about how to improve today. They're thinking about all the junk they dealt with yesterday, right? They're letting their outlook control what could be their opportunity, And what we try to teach people to do is to look at things from different angles. Get a mentor, get a coach. In fact, I'll give you one of the most pivotal questions I ever asked myself. Be willing to ask hard questions. One of the most pivotal questions I ever asked myself was actually on a treadmill. Believe it or not, I was reasonably successful at that time from a financial and world perspective, not necessarily from a heart perspective, where I asked myself, what does it take to change the essence of a man? Because on the surface, I had a great reputation in the marketplace. I seemed to have the stuff that everybody thinks that once they get, that makes them satisfied. The businesses were growing. I had some notability in the marketplace. But yet I was going home consistently feeling unfulfilled, unhappy, unworthy, et cetera. So I got on a treadmill one afternoon and I began asking myself, what does it take to change the essence of a person? Now, that question of, in and of itself can be pretty powerful if you'll be willing to sit and listen to the answers. Because that took me on a rabbit trail of asking other questions that were able to help, that were able to help me clarify where I was heading. For example, what's going right in my life, right? Because what's going right in your life is going to give you some of the gratitude components of things that you could be thankful for. At my lowest moment when I was homeless, it was like, okay, I got to wake up and breathe today. Like I was able to meet someone new today. Like there were very, very basic things that take you from crisis mode and allow you to begin to build up some momentum. The other questions like, what's missing? Like, what's confusing? What's wrong? Now, on the surface level, each of these questions is like crazy simple. I actually learned them from a good friend of mine named Chris Licurdo, and then I later found out that he learned them from a great book. I'm going to jack the name of the title up, but it's written by, it's one of those moments in my brain, Tom Patterson, who actually is in Nashville. I think he's in his 80s in Nashville, but I'll make sure I message you guys the name of the book because it's a fantabulous book. But those questions he called the four helpers. I refer to them the questions of discernment, really a difference between them. But those four questions specifically, if you'll sit down and actually listen to the question in a quiet place, grab a notepad and a pen and sit. Just sit in those questions. You know, so what's going right in my relationships? What's going right in my finance? What's going right in my profession? What's going right with my kids? What's going right with my aspirations? And you ask those same questions of each of the what we refer to as the eight pillars of life all over again. So financial, spiritual, relational, physical, developmental, contribution. Like you just ask those questions and you get a ton of clarity. The reason that gaining perspective phase one is so powerful and so important is because most people don't do it. They don't do it. Most people don't do it is because they're so scared of the answer that they're going to get. They're scared that they're going to find more evidence that somehow they're unworthy or somehow insignificant. The crazy part is the opposite often happens. So when you begin to ask better questions, you get better answers. I'm not the first person to say that. That's like life mastery 101, but it's so true. Which then takes you into step two, phase two. And phase two builds off of phase one, like everything else. Like if you're going up a set of stairs, right? Right? One stair leads you to the next stair. Phase two is what I like to refer to as remove roadblocks. Once you go through a scenario of awareness, gaining perspective, learning more about yourself, learning more about your hindrances, learning more about the beliefs, the actions, the results that you were letting hold you back in many cases. Now you can begin to bring a magnifying glass and actually begin to have a place to focus down in on those. And as a result, now you might start seeing some things that are holding you back. Case in point, when I first started my first business, right, it's been roughly 20 plus years ago. I did not want anyone to know that I was a homeless high school dropout with dyslexia, ADHD. I didn't want anybody to know any of my dirty, right? Any of the shameful moments, okay? What I later learned is that that was actually the conduit that allowed people to empathize and be compassionate with me when I was being a horrible leader, right? I was being overly defensive, right? My defensiveness was coming from my insecurities and my fear. But yet I acted like I had it all figured out, where secretly I would go back to my closet and go to my prayer closet, so to speak, and be like, well, I hope they don't find out. I hope they don't find out. Please don't let them find out. Right. And I think moments like that are roadblocks that were directly connected to turning off major relationships, not just in my team, but also in business, in how I conducted myself as a husband, how I conducted myself as a father. Because if my first reaction is to get defensive anytime someone disagrees with one of my opinions, then that's automatically going to repel people, if you will, that are part of that, that maybe I want to attract. So removing roadblocks comes in a variety of forms. It could be an action you're taking that you need to stop taking. It could be a belief or a mindset that you've got to shift. It could be a certain behavior pattern that tends to repel the very relationships you need. But each one of those phases begin to build on the other two. And for the sake of time, I'll just kind of mention the other two. The third one is actually organize a plan, right? So what the show's all about is a framework, a strategy, a process, right? And then the W, if you will, the fourth phase is nothing more than work your plan and adjust. And so it's, we call it grow. So G-R-O-W, gain perspective, remove roadblocks, organize a plan, and then work your plan. At the end of the day, if someone will sit with that small acronym and sit in those questions of discernment and then are honest with themselves, as I've been forced to be, yes, it's uncomfortable, but it is worth it, then ultimately you can begin to build the very framework you need to move to the next level. And when I say level, I don't mean like, what do they call it? The hokey pokey, like, you know, when I say move to the next level, I'm not talking like, okay, everybody, let's move to the next level. Everybody, let's go. I'm talking to, you know what I'm saying? I'm talking about
the woo-woo movement.
Yes, I'm not talking woo-woo. I'm talking about practicality. I know that, for example, if I look at my financial stuff, right? I have no, like, let's assume I suck at financial, right? Or I have problems in my financial life. The fact that I can save $300 is a huge improvement to the month before. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People underestimate incremental progress. I have not met a single successful person yet that would tell you that they were somehow an overnight success, that somehow a magic fairy or an angel shows up, zaps them on with a little pixie dust and stuff like that, and all of a sudden they got life figured out. In fact, it's the opposite. Every single person that I've had the joy of getting to know and being in the same relationships with would all tell you that it all comes from incremental progress. Baby steps lead to giant leaps. That's just the way it is. So hopefully that helps some. I go off on tangents, so feel free to interrupt you, Tom.
I love it. And you're so right. You hear all the time, oh, that person came out of nowhere. They're an overnight success. But yeah, they're an overnight success 25 years in the making. That all of a sudden, the world and society has now considered them a success. But in their own mind, they had hundreds of successes along the way. Hundreds of successes that now put them in somebody else's view or somebody else's opinion of a success. And I really relate to what you said about being able to own your dark times or own your hard times and be able to own that story, because it's what makes you relatable. It's what makes you approachable. It's what makes you resonate with a lot of other people that you're hoping to impact. And so my question for you is, and I know you brought it up and kind of brushed over it really quickly, I'd love you to go into a little bit more depth about your story, being that high school dropout, going from this level of homelessness to ultimately today. And when were you able to truly own your story?
You know, I'll tell you what, I'll be completely transparent, because I feel like that's what the world needs more of. It goes back to the moment I kind of mentioned before. I did kind of gloss over it in that, you know, I said I went to my prayer closet and I didn't want people to find out, all that kind of stuff. So here's what happened. It was roughly 2011, and I had a reasonably successful business at the time. We had just maybe approached $10 or $15 million in top line revenue. We had decent margins. You know, I had a nice home. You know, we had some nice things. We'd been on some vacations. We had what everyone tells you is supposed to be an amazing life, right? That's what we had. We on paper, it was like, okay, I should be happy. But I wasn't. And inevitably what happened was, is I went to my prayer closet, person of faith by nature, and began to pray to the God that I believed in. There's got to be more to life than this. There's got to be more. Now, even in that reasonable level of what most people would call success, not only was I empty, but I also knew that I was a bad leader, that I wasn't leading people well, right? Because you can see in people's eyes when you offend them. The trick is being able to stop and realize that that offense has occurred and do something about it in the moment, which I was not gifted at that time. And lo and behold, I had a seminar that came across my desk from my controller at the time. And so I went to the seminar. It was over in Austin, Texas. I'll never forget this. It was a 3-day seminar. I spent the first 2 days getting my teeth kicked in, if you will, of all this, just the dumb behaviors I was doing because I simply didn't know any better, right? And that was kind of like the first catalyst. The second catalyst was I had a young lady that was working in my office as a receptionist / remodeling technician. And one of the things that we did with my organization is I said, okay, well, if I'm going to give out profit sharing, I'm going to have a financial program, a financial literacy program that I'm going to force the team to take before I say you now qualify for profit sharing. So at least on the surface, that seemed like a good idea. One of the ways in which I realized that my leadership needed a lot of work and I needed a lot of help was this young lady tapped me on the shoulder one afternoon. I remember I was unloading the boxes that went with this financial curriculum onto our back counter in our office. And just, I move fast by nature kind of scenario. And she taps me on the shoulder and she basically says, hey, look, my husband and I, we can't make the financial classes. Is it okay if we participate in profit sharing? Right. And I barked at her. I was like, no. And I went back to moving the boxes. And next thing you know, I overheard sniffles behind me just, and she started crying. I turned around for the first time. I was actually aware that an offense had occurred, which is why I bring it up. Because I don't think a lot of times that any of us can slow down and make to see that an offense has occurred or a wedge, if you will, has been put in the middle. And I stopped her for a second. And I said, hey, whoa, what's going on? What has happened? And she proceeded to tell me that her husband and her were both working two jobs. They were trying to get themselves out of debt. They had a second child on the way, and their young daughter, they didn't have anybody to basically watch their daughter, essentially is what it boiled down to. So that was why they couldn't make the class. It wasn't because they didn't want to make the class. It wasn't because that they were somehow apprehensive to learning how to use money better. It was because they legitimately had a legitimate problem in basically making the class. Here's the tricky part. Had I slowed down and taken the time to address it, I would have been able to articulate to her on the front side through better communication skills that as the owner of the business, I had already made a way for that. I had already hired part-time babysitter youth people to come in and watch the kids actually at our facility while the class is going on. Not only that, I was providing dinner those nights. That one piece of information could have eliminated fear in her heart. It could have laid it. I'm sure she had been terrified to ask me the question to begin with, because I have you guys probably realize a fairly bold personality kind of, right? So, but that's, you know, those are evidences of something's wrong. Something's got to change. And those were catalysts for me specifically to know that through all of the success, whatever you want to call it, right? We all know that that's not success. To me, success is how many people can you help in your lifetime? That's going to leave a mark, right? But in our pursuit through the world, a lot of times we lose sight of what's really important on a consistent basis. And as a result, we end up hungering for the wrong things and therefore create wedges of ourselves. So those are two of my aha moments. Both from the live event perspective, and then also from a team member perspective that actually helped me shape like who I wanted to be. Because I didn't have any aspirations of who I wanted to be. And I think sometimes we get stuck not having aspirations of who you really want to be.
So Stephen, what you're describing is what we call an ownership mindset. When you're on this, and oftentimes it's something happens, there's an event that happens to be living in that pre-ownership mindset and then really shift into that post-ownership mindset. when you're talking about this journey that you're on, this pre-ownership mindset, was that defensiveness, was that, mm-hmm. you know, not really wanting to admit to yourself the type of leader that you were, the snippy behavior, you know, some of these things that you're describing is very prevalent in our society today. But now what you're referring to is leading others in a motivational way, serving others, right? And mm-hmm. so I want to go a little bit deeper on that second piece of things. And sure. how did you come to terms? Because you talked about how you came to terms, right? You had the awareness that you weren't the best leader. You had the awareness, you started to generate awareness that you were a little defensive in certain situations. But how did you start to become really honest with yourself? You said it a couple of times now that honesty with yourself is really important. And in the journey that I've had, I think that's one of the toughest things I've seen both in myself and others, is that willingness to be honest with ourselves. Mm-hmm. So talk to us yeah. a little bit more about that and how you came to that realization.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, and maybe we share this, you know, some people learn easier than others. I'm a pretty stubborn individual by nature. A lot of what I learned is a result of a 4x4 upside the head, both figuratively and literally. You know, I think in order to get my attention, it came down to multiple life moments, i.e. one of those was the death of my grandmother. One of those was my homelessness. One of those was rebuilding a business after an embezzlement scare. One of those was, you know, writing my first book and stuff like that. All of those moments, the one thing that all of those moments have in common is a crushing moment. It's for me, because I learned, because I'm so stubborn. I had to have a moment where it stopped me in my tracks. It forced me to look at who I was. It wasn't, I wish I could say it's a lot more intentional now than it was, obviously 2 decades ago. But before then, it wasn't intentional at all. It wasn't top of mind. And I think that's one of the reasons why we work so hard, all of us, to bring more intentionality and more of this awareness to the top of mind, rather than being more of a responsive kind of behavior. You know, but for me, it was lots of crying moments. I'm just being real. Sometimes in my closet that I've already mentioned before, I'm crying. I'm like, please don't let them find out. I don't know what I'm doing. Sometimes it's like, how did I not see this coming? But you have those, what is the old adage? Becoming comfortable with the uncomfortable, right? The reality is, if you can't become comfortable with being uncomfortable, then you're not going to be able to exhibit the ability to stop, pause, and become more aware. You're just not going to be able to do it. And for me, that was probably the biggest catalyst moment, was the crushing moments helped me understand the different areas that I needed to improve upon. It also taught me the importance of looking at myself before I look at others, which that was not something that came natural to me, you know, and especially growing up in the environment that I grew up in, it was always about somebody else. It's somebody else's reason why we don't have enough money. It's somebody else's reason why there's a divorce going on. It's somebody else's you know, there's always somebody else's fault. And those crushes forced me, and I do mean forced me, to stop what I was doing and very quickly understand that I had a role to play in each one of those crushings, right? My homelessness, for example, was not a result of someone else. My homelessness was mine. It was my fault, right? I made a bunch of money, you know, the year prior. I got super cocky, super arrogant, started hanging out with the wrong people, started dating the wrong person, even though there was clear signs that wasn't going to be a healthy relationship, and ultimately chose to walk off a job site, chose to give up everything that had been given to me, chose to walk out that journey out of, you know, and unfortunately at that time, I was more depressed than anything else, but that was my choice. Now, that may have led me into homelessness, for example, that those moments. What kept me there was pride, right? And I think pride is a prison that holds a lot of us back. We're too terrified to let somebody else know that we don't have it all figured out, right? And for me, that was the defining moment, was when I realized that if I was going to get anywhere in life at all, regardless of what it was, getting basic stability with shelter and food, I was going to have to let other people in. The trick is knowing who to let in and when to let them in. But I can promise you the hardest person for me to help nowadays is the one who's convinced they have it all figured out. But yet they still have the symptoms of life. Their checkbook still can't balance. Their marriage is still struggling. They're still getting not promoted. And somebody's getting promoted in front of them. All these different, those are symptoms. And they're symptoms of that we can and should do better. So those catalyst moments kind of led me that direction. So it comes down to, yes, the crushing might be tough, does require you to be more aware and ask greater questions of yourself, but please make sure the pride is not holding you back more than anything else.
How has your life changed with this level of mindset? And ultimately, how is it impacting others today?
That's such a good question. I think the way it's changed me is a matter of perspective and shift. Here's what I mean. Before elements of my personal transformation of my own, you know, because obviously personal transformation leads to relational transformation, leads to professional transformation, so on and so forth. So it all starts with you, okay? The ownership mentality, the true ownership mentality. I learned a long time ago that I was living from a selfish place. And now I'm doing everything within my power to live from a selfless place. Ironically, the selfish place kept me in areas of lack, always feeling like I didn't have enough and like nothing was ever going to be real to satisfy those various needs. Now it's all about how many people can I serve? How can I serve them? How can I execute something that I've learned and use that to leverage it in such a way that helps them maybe skip 5 years, skip 10 years off their journey? Maybe they don't have to like find themselves crying in their pillow or crying in a closet or, you know, like we go through so much junk because we simply don't know any better. It's ridiculous. So I think I had two major shifts. One of the things that I'm known for saying, and it just comes out because it's what I call a life truth, a life truth. Most of the world is walking around going, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? What's my purpose? Who am I supposed to be? Where am I supposed to go? How am I going to get there? All these different questions. That's where they live. What's my, okay. I've discovered that the greatest purpose in life you'll ever have is serving the person you used to be. You take all your wisdom, all your experience, both positive and negative, and you use that as a tool to help someone else who maybe was following along your path, if you will, but you're able to help them sooner, right? You know, a lot of what I do now, even though it's utilized to help a lot of, you know, executives and athletes and stuff like that, really who I'm actually after, who I'm really trying to serve is the 13-year-old kid who doesn't understand why his parents can't stay together, the 13-year-old kid who doesn't understand why his dad missed another game, and because he's passed out somewhere, the 13-year-old kid who's trying to figure out how to make sure that the light bill stay on because he's tired of having lights get shut off in the cold water instead of hot water on the shower. Like, ultimately, that's the person I'm trying to serve. Because if I can get to him at 12 years old or 11 years old or 10 years old, you see what I'm saying? I'm now serving the person I used to be. And whatever tools that you have in your tool bag, the experiences you have, all of those different types of things are uniquely designed to you to help give you compassion and empathy and the tactical ability to help that person solve a need. The second major shift, and this is a choice. Both of these are choices. You know, serving the person you used to be is a choice, right? The next one is just as equally as a choice. And that is, I'm choosing to focus my energy, my effort, my talents, my skills, whatever they may be, right? However little they may be, to leverage them towards creating a legacy that outlives me. I don't want my time on this earth to be spent accumulating stuff. I want to be a Steve Myrick. I want to be a Susan Batts. I want to be the Silver Fox, AKA my grandfather. I want to be someone who believes in someone else when they don't believe in themselves and can give them a tactical plan to go from step A to step Z. And I think that both of those are a choice. And if you're going at your life on a regular basis, serving self and going through the motions, you are always going to feel empty and unfulfilled. However, even if you start now and you don't have a large platform, you don't have a big business, you don't have a, I mean, you may not even have a, even you don't have, even not employed, you can still choose right now to send a text to a friend, an email to a friend that is maybe somewhere you've already been, right? You can choose right now to pick up a book that's going to help you learn something new so that you could later give it to somebody else. So I think it comes down again to selfishness versus selflessness. And you get to choose which kind of lifestyle you want to leave or live. And if you choose one, I think you end up feeling more fulfilled, no matter how much money you have, no matter who your relationships are. And you can choose the other, which you're constantly living unfulfilled, unhappy, and like you're living a meaningless life. Let's face it, nobody wants to live a meaningless life. So I hope that answers your question. It's a little long-winded, but I couldn't help myself.
It absolutely does. And, you know, Stephen, it's so clear you live every single day in an ownership mindset. You have made so many conscious choices to get there, right? You no longer have pride hold you back. You made the shift from selfishness to selflessness. And now you're living in a servitude mindset every single day of your life, helping the person you used to be, helping your former self. And these are exactly the type of people that we have in the show and why we asked you to be here today. Now, this is one of our favorite questions our listeners love to hear is, in one word or a short phrase, what to you is your definition of ownership?
My definition of ownership is choosing the greater good on a daily basis. I think inside of that, that's gonna force you to wrap up new levels of self-awareness. It's gonna force you to challenge yourself consistently, and it's gonna force you to go from that selfish place to a selfless place. I think if you do that consistently, I think that would be my definition of ownership.
Perfectly said.
Stephen, where can people get in touch with you? Where can people find more of you, more of your content, and everything that you have to offer that you've now been able to wrap up through your experiences and now deliver to the mass?
Oh, gosh, man. So first of all, it would be an honor to have people reconnect with me on other channels. I'm most active on Instagram, which is Stephen with a PH underscore Scoggins. You can always visit stephenscoggins.com. And if you want to take it to another level and join Tom Bilyeu, Lisa Bilyeu, Anthony Trucks, and several other people with me, we have an event coming up October 21st to the 22nd on 23rd on August or October this year called Transform You Live, transformyoulive.com. Love to have you there and check it out.
I love it. And a lot of those guys are, those people you mentioned are people we've had on the show and people we're involved with. So we'll definitely have to connect offline with that as well. So guys, as you go forward, ask yourself, what is it that you believe in? Do you believe in yourself? And if you do, great. And if you don't, who around you can you surround yourself with that does? Who around you can you surround yourself with to help level you up? Because eventually you're going to get to that, to be that person. As Matthew McConaughey said in that famous speech, he goes, who is your person you look up to? It's myself 5 years from now. It's knowing that I am going to be better 5 years from now if I truly put the work in to get there. And once you are there, just as Stephen said, you can look back and be that person that you needed then. You can believe in that person. You can believe in that person that you were 5 years ago. Because by doing that, you can change your outlook. You can change your outlook that ultimately blinds you of the opportunity that's in front of you. And you can do it through four major steps. And it's through growth. Gain perspective, removing roadblocks, organizing a plan, and then working that plan so that ultimately you can go and choose the greater good on a daily basis. Because what do we know? Success is different. So be different and own it. We'll see you next week.